Welcome to AI in Journalism. I'm Yumi Wilson, a journalism professor, branding expert, and your host. In this podcast, we'll boldly explore the intersection of AI and journalism, from its origins to its implications for newsrooms. We'll discuss the symbiosis of AI and human judgment, ethical concerns, and most importantly, arm you with the knowledge to navigate this brave new world. Whether you're a budding journalist, seasoned editor, or simply an AI enthusiast, join us as we fearlessly uncover the future of journalism in the age of artificial intelligence. Welcome to AI in Journalism. Today, I'm excited to welcome AJ Green to AI in Journalism. AJ started his career in fitness before pivoting to AI in 2022. He quickly became a key figure in the field. As the founder and CEO of AI Advantage Agency, AJ has led the development of over 400 AI applications across various industries. Beyond business, he advises the U.S. and Mexican governments on AI policy and chairs the Washington County Chamber of Commerce Young Professionals. AJ's agency supports minority-owned businesses and startups, ensuring they benefit from AI, and that is another big discussion to have. From AI chatbots to voice models and emotional intelligence, AJ is helping to shape the future of AI. AJ, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Yumi. It is a pleasure and an honor to be here. I was really looking forward to this.
Well, I'm glad to have you. Thank you. So let's talk fitness. And I'm a big fitness person. Truth be told, I used to be a fitness instructor at 24 Hour Fitness. I have found, you know, that's such a big part of my career and so on. But the question is, you shifted from fitness to AI. What inspired you to make that move?
So this is actually a very fun story that I like to tell. It is kind of woven into my origin story in the AI space. So for those that don't know, I was an Olympic weightlifter and I was paid to move heavy things. And that was quite literally my job. I had grown up always anticipating a future in fitness. I had family that were trainers and athletes. So for the longest point of my time in my life, that's what I always thought my life was going to be. And it wasn't until I had a traumatic injury that actually left me paralyzed that I made the transition into AI. And I had semi-paralysis with disc herniation and rupture, and it left me just completely bedridden for months on end. So this was actually around the same time that ChatGPT had entered the world. So I had been really used to pushing my body and pushing myself, and I'm always aspiring to do more. But my body wasn't able to handle it at all. But luckily for me, it was a great time and like divine timing that ChatGPT came out around the same time. So I thought to myself, hey, my body is not able to perform, but I can still do things with my mind. And this was a big shift for my life. This was the biggest shift ever. Prior to 2022, I never thought that I possessed the capabilities or the intelligence to be in technology. And I always tell people, like, I thought my whole life, wow, I'm way too dumb to be in tech. And I kind of had that as my, you know, perception of self. And it wasn't until I actually started to work with some of the models and start to get more educated that I was like, no, this is something that is approachable, that anybody can get into. And it's just a matter of working to get after those goals, the same thing that you were doing with your body.
Wow. Where do we go after that? We got to stay there, right? We got to stay there just a little bit. The mindset was strong and the body needed that support. And I want to first ask, because I had been hearing one of the things that AI, a certain type of AI can do is to help patients who may, in fact, have suffered paralysis or, you know, need help. Was that any part of the equation when you were thinking, okay, let me jump into AI?
So believe it or not, none of those things were existing at that time, at least not to my knowledge. So I've since paid a lot of attention to the biomedical field, and I think the advancements in AI technology is astounding. And I was actually thinking to myself the other day, wow, I really wish that some of this technology had been available during that time. Definitely would have healed my recovery. I was also very stubborn when it comes to my rehabilitation because at, you know, being a world-class athlete at age 22, I thought to myself, hey, I'm able to take care of it. If I can get this far, I can do it by myself. So I did a lot of physical therapy on my own for 2 years, and now I am so fortunate to be fully healthy again. But that was not part of the motivation behind getting into AI. I actually looked at AI as the great equalizer for startups, small businesses, and minority-owned businesses. And this was actually what led me to create AI Advantage. Was I had known about machine learning and deep learning when I first started tinkering around. And I quickly found out that big data has been providing these services to big enterprise corporations since the 1960s. And there was a massive gap in the market when it comes to startups and small businesses. And generative AI was the solution that made sense. Knowing that as well, part of my background was, you know, being a first-generation American, first-generation college student, it was really important for me to make sure that I was providing opportunities for minority-owned businesses. And that was kind of the symbiotic nature of AI Advantage.
I think you made a really good point, and I just want to say yes to the fact that it used to be where if you didn't know coding, if you didn't already know Java, or, you know, all of the different things, the idea of working on the back end or of helping others develop, you know, that just wasn't a notion, right? And then this came along where, for example, coding, right? You can go into it and ask, hey, help me develop this code for X, Y, Z. But having said that, how do you go, all right, I'm going to learn this or I'm going to jump at, no, I mean, were you watching YouTube videos? Did you go to different schools? Tell me if you could. What was the journey like once you made that decision, I'm in and I'm going to go for this?
So it was something that I actually stumbled upon. So people think that it was a clear set direction. Hey, this is where I'm headed in. It was a passion that turned into an obsession, which then turned into a business. So I became really passionate about AI because this was the first time in my life that I felt like I was capable of working with technology. So I was, and this is so funny, I was in the first like 1,000 users of GPT the day that it launched. And this is just divine timing. Like I had no idea that this product was going to be released. I just stumbled across it. And as soon as I started using it, I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. So I was just really passionate. And I was using it so much that I had used all the tokens. I was requesting more tokens. I was emailing the GPT developers. And I was like, guys, can you just give me more tokens? Like, I'm addicted to using this thing. It's so fun. And so it was a great passion. But then I knew that because of my lack of technical expertise, I had to radically get up to the speed of people in the industry. So I actually paid for mentors and I paid for certifications. And I ended up getting over 15 certifications in the first 6 months. And these are certifications from Harvard and IBM and Meta. And these are typically like 6 month programs that I was completing in a course of like a week or two. I had nothing better to do, right? My body needed to rest. I was not physically able. So I was like, okay, I have all the time and energy to give. So let me just learn as much as I can. So I really tried to get up to speed in terms of the education. And then I felt like I had a good handle in terms of the technology itself from like an academic standpoint. So the next thing for me after that was, okay, how can I identify the gaps in the market and see how people are actually using this technology? So this was around the same time that I started to get into like forums, like Discord channels, Slack channels on YouTube. And I started to look at unstructured data. And I was like, okay, now that I have the educational background, let me see how people are actually using this and what their opinions are. So before I had even created my first solution, I had already talked to so many people and seen their perspective on the technology and what they wish that they could do, but didn't have the, you know, the knowledge or the development skills to be able to do that. So number one was the educational components. And number two is just listening to the consumer, which I think is still to this day, one of the most important things about being an AI.
Let me ask you about unstructured data. You were saying that you had access to that. First of all, how did you get access to it? And then what did you do with it to give you that insight that you needed to see where the gaps in the market were?
Good question. I first came across Liam Otley. He was the first individual. Big shout out to Liam Otley. I have since started to work with him, which is crazy because he was the person that got me into AI in terms of like the agency space. So I came across Liam's channel and he did a great job in providing details. He had an online community. So I joined his online community and I started to just message people inside of the community. And I would come across as very like genuine and humble because I really just wanted to learn. So I would say, hey, I made a Calendly and I was like, hey, let's hop on like a 30-minute call. If you have anything that I think you would like to share about how you're using technology, I would love to hear it. So I started to meet people for coffee in Portland. Portland. I started to hop on calls with random people, people that I had no intention of selling to, just the intention of listening. So I kind of just worked my way through the different communities and I came across some other people. Another great shout out is Lizard AI, LYZR. They're another great resource as well. They are people that have lots of followings for the space. And I was like, okay, if I could message anybody inside of this 10,000 member community, and let's say that I can message 1,000 people and get on like, you know, a handful of calls, that's going to take me one step closer to learning more about how people actually need the technology and what they don't need.
I'm just learning so much. And, you know, in some ways, it kind of mirrors the journey that I'm on. You know, here I am, a longtime professor who all of a sudden discovers, whoa, AI can be doing so much. And you actually did some journalism there when you went and talked to regular people. So kudos to you asking them, hey, what's going on? So I really appreciate that. Then did you decide, this is the kind of service I'm going to offer to people?
Definitely. Once I had gotten the validation from the customers in the market, my next goal was, okay, let's identify a gap. Let's see who's currently not being serviced. And this is when I came across startups and small businesses. So my first product was AI for Startups. And it was a AI chatbot suite that was built for small teams that was meant to essentially replace their executive board. So rather than say that we have a team of three and we have three, you know, all co-founders on the board, let's go ahead and use AI for Startups as my CMO because I don't have a CMO, or a CTO because I don't have a CTO. So it was meant to give them expert advice so that way they could feel like they were being fully supported by the technology. But yeah, it was a matter of understanding where that gap in the market is and who's not being serviced. And I can't take full credit for that. That actually came from Sam Altman, who was a huge inspiration to me. And he said that one of the most important things that he does on a daily basis was he gets on calls with customers and he just listens to their problems. And that's it. And he just makes sure that's a big focal point for him. And I've made it a big focal point for me at AI Advantage. So it was, hey, now that I know this is how the technology works, this is what currently is not being serviced in the market, let's go ahead and create a little beginning of a product, just a rapid prototype, and seeing how people interact with it. And then one led to the next, which led to the next, and then started to identify bigger gaps, better solutions, and that's how we got here.
Kudos to Sam Altman for that tip.
Absolutely.
Okay, so now that you are serving so many people and helping them, are you still helping small, like, you know, solopreneurs, small businesses? Who are some of the people that you've helped, or if you can mention names?
So I had this question asked to me this morning, actually, and I think it was very interesting. I was trying to count to myself. So we've had so far over 400 AI projects. Of the 400, I can count on my hands the amount of large enterprise clients that we've had, and the rest of which have been startups and small businesses. So some of the bigger clients that we've had, to throw some out there, is Pfizer, Moderna, Intel.
Those are kind of big.
Pretty well-known names. But those were mainly as a result of our partnerships in the space and partnering with other development software companies. So those were very long-term solutions that we just got fortunate enough to be a part of that conversation. But still to this day, our bread and butter is startups and small businesses. And my goal is we've now scaled. Our original founding team was me and my co-founder. We have since scaled to over 4,000 employees across the whole world. And our primary focus is still startups and small businesses.
Okay, that's inspirational, but also amazing, right? You know?
Yeah, it's been insane.
Yeah. Now, okay, so as you know, the focus of this show is all about AI and journalism. So what are some recommendations or tips that you would give to certainly the freelancer, but small newsrooms, you know, local news is so important. What would be the kind of advice you could give to them?
Absolutely. So when it comes to doing marketing, copywriting, ad development, things that are in the journalism and creative field, if we think back to the early ChatGPT days in 2022, everything sounded robotic. And it was very clear what was AI generated, what was not AI generated. And since 2022, the models have gotten a lot better. They do a much better job of coming across more human-like, but the models can only do so much work. I actually focus more on the people that are using the models when it comes to implementation for journalism and for things in the marketing nature. So there's two routes in which I recommend to people. And the first route is prompting. So prompt engineering is the quickest and most efficient way to get better output out of the model. So prompt engineering, what we normally recommend when we work with a business is we'll actually create them a prompt library and we'll say, hey, when you have this particular use case, use this prompt. When you have this use case, use this prompt. We've actually built tools that have prompt engineering automated into it. So for example, you can talk to one of our products and you can spit natural language. So natural language, the same way that we're talking right here, without knowing anything about prompt engineering. And it will actually self-enhance the prompt to that way come across as the optimal output. So that's the first route, is the better that you can get at prompt engineering or the better libraries that you can create for prompt engineering, the better that your output is going to be. And when we say better in terms of marketing, we're talking more human-like. That is the goal. Because I think that there's a big consensus that nobody wants to come across as robotic when they're using AI. The goal is, how can I scale my output while still remaining my genuine self and, you know, a human level of creativity? So that's the first thing. The second thing is custom solutions. So custom solutions is what we specialize in at AI Advantage. And the main reason is because with a custom solution, we can bypass prompting altogether. And what I mean by this, and we might be oversharing a little bit, but that's okay because value is value. So for the custom solutions, we'll actually take all of the data that a company has produced. So we're talking all of the blogs, all of the journals, the podcasts, the articles, the website content, the emails, everything that we can get our hands on, structured or unstructured. And we're actually going to feed that into a custom model. So that way the AI can sound more like you. So that way when you're going ahead and creating a blog, it doesn't sound like ChatGPT. It actually sounds like Yumi. So both get you to the same end goal. Prompting is a little bit harder on the front end to create that prompt library, but once you have it, you're ready to go. And custom is a little bit different in the sense that you're typically working with a software development firm like ourselves, and we're actually the ones that are creating that. But then it's much easier to use because all you do is plug and play.
I'm sold. Where do I sign up? No, okay. Get serious for a second here. But okay, so I am going to imagine that the costs of these services are quite expensive.
I would reckon that it would be the opposite. And I'll tell you what. So we did some industry stats because we're working on new pitch decks and new sales slides and whatnot. So I took a pulse check of other competitors in the space. On average, we are at least 5x cheaper than our competition. And again, that has to do with us having the mission of making AI accessible and affordable. So these custom solutions can start as low as $500. So we try to make it affordable for the startups and small businesses. We have pricing that goes all the way up to $50,000, but those are for our large clients, right? And our large enterprise, which is, like we said, very small percentage of our population. So majority of the sales that we do is between $500 to $2,000. We try to get monthly reoccurrence as low as possible. And then we just have people buy as needed. So for example, an average price point for us is starting with $1,000 as a startup, going into a $200 monthly subscription. And if you need additional development, you can purchase additional development by the hour. So you can get exactly what you need. And the reason that goes into the accessibility part. So we have the affordability to make sure that it's affordable for our population. The accessibility is, hey, when you need extra help, we're there to help. We can do consulting, we can do development, we can do a custom build. So yeah, believe it or not, it is not breaking the bank. And that's the greatest thing about generative AI.
That is good news. And I think that there would be a lot of interest in tools like that. You know, some of the things I'm doing in terms of prompting, I'll do with 6 different platforms. I'll jump on ChatGPT first, and then I'll check it out on Gemini, and then I go over to Claude. Now, having said that, isn't there a value in having people who are certainly maybe new to AI test out these tools themselves?
Absolutely. So I always say you need to meet the user where they're at. So we work a lot with people that have no idea about AI. So typically what we'll do if somebody is brand new to the space is we'll actually send them one of our lowest level tiers and we'll just give them a sample. and we'll say, hey, this is something, this is on the house. Go ahead and play with it, experiment with it, see what you think. And we do that knowing that this is just a fraction of what we can actually do in terms of the software. And we're saying, hey, let's go ahead. For example, say that Yumi's brand new to AI. We'll have a conversation in one of our calls. And they're like, well, you know, I'm really interested in AI, but I'm, you know, pretty cautious. And I don't really have any idea about it. Say, hey, here's a great starting point. Go ahead and experiment with this. Learn with it, tinker with it, and let's check back in a month and see how you're feeling. And 9 out of 10 times when we check back in the month later, they're like, oh my God, I haven't stopped using it. This is crazy. And then we're like, great, that is our lowest level offer. The sky's the limit.
Just for the listeners who might be thinking, wow, I have not signed up for any of these services. I'm certainly thinking about it now, but I got to tell you, like the way that I found AJ is just through researching people who were doing good work in this space so I can learn from them and we can learn from them.
And I would say to touch on what you said as well, like exploration, in my opinion, is one of the best things that you can do if you're new to the space. Because as great as it is to have a company like ourselves work with you off of the jump, it helps when you have a better understanding of what the technology can do, right? And the more that you use it yourself, the more that you realize, oh, this is how I could be using this technology, or this is where it might make sense in my business. And of course, we can always provide that, and we do a complimentary AI audit to help steer the direction. But I think at the end of the day, the most important thing is actually using it itself. So that's why when we hop on calls, when we go to conferences, we're always demoing our products, because we can talk about it as much as we want. But when you actually get your hands on it and you can use it yourself, that's where I think a lot of the learning happens.
On that note, let's talk about one of the key areas of expertise that you have, which is creating custom AI chatbots, replicating a brand's voice. Can you explain how this works and impacts SEO?
So this is one of our cornerstone services. So we have chatbots and we have workflows. And those are the two most frequently requested services at our company. In terms of chatbots, and when we get to branded chatbots, this is a little bit about what I was saying earlier of we first meet the client and we'll hop on a call. And the whole point of the call is to learn about what types of content that they would like to produce. Because whether it's X threads or I need LinkedIn posts or I need SEO for my website, everything looks slightly different, right? In terms of what's going to be highest performing. So the first thing is we want to narrow down what platform or what communication channel are we going to be using. Once we have that, the next thing is we're searching for data. So now we're searching for every bit of remnants that exist on the internet. We actually have scraping tools that, so you don't have to provide it. Our scraping tools will go ahead and sometimes we'll pull up to like 10 million data points about a consumer.
That's amazing.
So we'll find everything that's ever existed online about this individual and the way that they talk, their background, their experiences. Because the same thing, the more data that we can feed into the model, the more accurate that it's going to be when it tries to sound like us. So we'll do the consultation, we'll figure out our medium, then we'll go ahead and start scraping and collecting data. The next thing is we'll actually interweave that data into the training data of the model, and we'll start beta testing. And we'll beta test in terms of we'll use some tool, something like SEMrush for SEO. We'll do multivariate testing for social media platforms, and we'll run AI on the analytics to enhance it over time. So we'll start with our beta test. We'll figure out how we can improve and enhance the model. And the next thing is we turn it over to you guys. And then we say, hey, this thing is finally built. Typically, the timeline for this is like 1 week to do the whole A to B. And after that, we start implementing it into their workflow, which then gets us into the second bit, which is workflows, which is a little bit more advanced. But the chatbot side, I think, is the best place to start.
Okay. I want to ask about workflow. But first, who owns all of this data that's being created? Is it the company? And then do you create your own kind of tool that then becomes your database?
So the technology itself is owned by our company. The data is not owned by us. So we have very secure data privacy rights because we take that very seriously. And funny little backstory, we think that this is how all AI agencies should be operating. We didn't realize that it was something unique about AI Advantage until a couple months into operations when we were realizing, hey, not everybody's using it ethically and responsibly. There's a lot of AI agencies that will take the data from the consumer, and then now they'll take that data, sell it off to a different competitor. They'll sell it off to data vaults, essentially. And then they're making their profit twice because they're charging their consumer, but then they're also selling out the data. The reason why this is so wrong is because you just partnered with this consumer and they trusted you to make their products. Now, somebody else is going to collect that data and make those same products, which is going to be a conflict of interest, essentially. So for us, what we do is we say, hey, we're the ones creating the models. You have to access our server in order to use the model. And that's how we continue to have some level of control in that ecosystem. But when it comes to the data that we are scraping, that all belongs to you and we're not going to do anything with it. So it's essentially in a sandbox that we never give out.
That's pretty amazing.
It's very interesting because originally I thought that all agencies would be on the same page to use it ethically and responsibly. But it wasn't until I started to do more consultant work for the government and for policy that I realized that this is the future way of doing business in terms of AI. But there's a lot of companies who are not on the same page. And that's the whole point behind policy and regulation.
You have brought up an important area, and it's just that I think that's certainly a concern for many journalists, that the idea is that, yeah, you put in your information, you're talking about the research you're doing on a big investigative piece, and the next thing you know, can that content be then shared with others? And then, of course, there have been a number of stories and cases about newsrooms and finding out their content had been used without knowledge, without permission.
For those that are extremely concerned about data privacy, that's one of my personal interests as well. What I recommend is when we build a solution, we'll actually put it on a local server and we'll make sure that training data is not being collected. So even when you're continuing to use the model, you know that it's stored locally to your device and that data is not being shared across any other platform. Yes, because it's a big concern for a lot of our clients too when it comes to more financial sensitive information. So that's how we would typically approach it with them as well.
That's really good to know. Thank you for sharing that. So let's discuss emotional intelligence. You've worked with advanced voice models and emotional intelligence APIs. How does this technology improve user interactions?
We could talk for an hour just about that because I think that is fascinating. So this is within recent months. There has been a lot of advancements in the field. And I would say that Hume AI, HUME, they are definitely leading the industry in terms of emotional intelligence and recognition. So one of the things that I think is very interesting is that originally when generative AI popped onto the scene in 2022, it was only text-to-text, meaning I could put text in and I can get text out. And shortly after, one of the next modalities was text-to-speech. And this is where we get to things. Siri is a great example of text-to-speech. Siri has been doing this for quite a bit of time. And there's plenty of other people on the market that have been trying to go text-to-speech. We later got text-to-image, text-to-video, text-to-sound, all the other modalities that have come after this point. The interesting thing about the emotional intelligence aspect is that I've noticed when we apply a Hume API technology, we have such a better conversation with the bot. It's able to actually interpret your emotions, understand how you're feeling, and cater its responses accordingly. So one of the most interesting things that we built was a therapy bot. And we built this actually for veterans. And the reason why is because we noticed, same thing, noticing a gap in the market, we noticed that a lot of veterans do not like going to therapy and they don't like talking about their feelings because they're somewhat ashamed of some of the actions that they've committed. And they're also ashamed of being recognized with another human, right? So the reason that we actually partnered with the veterans business in Washington County, where I live, and the Hume API was able to interpret the emotions of that individual. And through the therapy, they had a much better outcome than with traditional chatbots because they were able to say, hey, I recognize that you are anxious talking about this subject. And actually, I know that you're 72% anxious. So this is even above normal charts.
My father would have benefited greatly from that. He served 26 years in the Army, went to Vietnam, and he never talked about it. And it's one of those things that you can now see with time and reflection that experience changes you. He really didn't share his emotions. So having a tool that may have been able to understand that in a way people often can't, even sometimes therapists, is such an encouraging development, I would say.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that you touched on too, which is that each human brings their own bias into a conversation. So even when it comes to therapy, in just terms of this particular project, which I thought was very interesting, was the veterans felt like they weren't being judged for their conversations. So they were more open and they were more honest about the things that they had experienced, which then allowed them to heal more throughout that process. And this is just one simple use case in terms of how to use the emotional intelligence API. And I also think that when we look into the future, and again, we don't have a looking ball, but we can see where the direction of the industry is headed. When we get into robotics that have computer vision, so they're able to interpret everything in real time, they have super intelligence, so they're able to be masters across multiple different disciplines, but they also have emotional intelligence and being able to interpret how people feel and in response to them. I think it gets to a very interesting use case. And in terms of how we can help heal people.
Yeah. With that tool that you created, was that a request or was that something that you saw as a need that you discovered?
So this was, again, a need that I discovered. So I had started volunteering with the Veterans Business Council at Washington County. And I noticed that a lot of people had negative connotations about therapy. Like even the veterans that knew that they needed help, and even some of them were my close personal friends, like you said, they would never open up about what they've experienced. And oftentimes they would joke about going to therapy where they're like, oh, you know, I just have to sit in this for an hour and then I'm going to go home. So I noticed that. I was like, man, these are people that could really be using this technology, but there's a stigma around going to therapy about this. And I started to just beta test it with my friends. So before it was a solution, and we've never charged for this either. This was something we provided, just totally complimentary. And we first started beta testing with some of my friends who are veterans who had served. And they were like, wow, this is actually really easy to use. It's super simple. I just open the app. I, you know, press talk and we go through the therapy conversation. It sends me a little transcript afterwards and it tells me some of the things that I should continue to work on in between sessions. And we loved it. So the next thing for that was, okay, let's actually roll this out to our community and see the impact that it has. And this is when we came into our partnership. And it is one of the coolest things I think that we have ever worked on in terms of it's not going to be a moneymaker. It could be. But that's not our goal. Our goal is really just to help debilitated veterans learn how to process that and do it in a way where they don't feel judged or, you know, guilty about it.
And have news stories been written on that?
No.
Wow. Because that's a news story in the making. Listen up, journalists. But the other thing I also think, it's also a great case study for newsrooms and for nonprofits who are thinking, how can AI assist us in our goals? I mean, for many journalists, I know that when I was working at the Chronicle and other places, it's about helping people ultimately, right? Making, you know, helping to create change that betters lives. And the tool that you created, it really kind of follows that journalistic spirit, which is, you know, you saw the need once again by talking to people and listening to them, and then came up with a solution that may cost you, right? Because it's costing you, but it's serving the community. So I just think there's a really good opportunity that's just such a great model for us to consider going forward.
Absolutely. And I think that in due time, this is my goal for a lot of AI, is that, of course, like we're very involved in the B2B space and in terms of working with corporations. But part of our focus is also on the nonprofit, focused on government side of things. And our biggest mission is just supporting minority-owned businesses and supporting minorities in general, people that have been marginalized. And I think that this technology is the greatest use case to do that I've ever seen.
Let me follow up on the serving of minority-owned businesses, you know, serving people of color. How is that defined in terms of helping, you know, let's say, businesses that identify, you know, as women owning them, or a business run by, you know, someone who's Japanese and Black, not mentioning names here. I mean, how is it that, is there a scholarship program?
I am so glad you asked. This is something that we, again, shouldn't be talking about, but we're going to be talking about it because it's something that is in our roadmap. We previously were doing it through discounts. That's the easiest way for us to do it, is simply say, okay, minority-owned business, B Corp certified, whatever that is, let's go ahead and let's knock the price off for them and make sure that we can work with them and meet their budget. But the latest thing that we've been doing is we've actually been partnering with government organizations and foundations to access funding for these businesses. So again, this was something that we built for free to these foundations. It was a grant research and a grant writing tool. So this would research all the grants that were available for their organization, and then it would write proposals on their behalf to the foundation or the fund. And this is where I brought in one of my greatest business partners I've ever met. And through this partnership, he was able to, because he's been working in the nonprofit space for over a decade. And now our main focus looking at, you know, we're actually currently working on this and it'll be released within the next quarter, is rolling out all of these grant writing tools to nonprofits and foundations and helping them gain access to funding, which then supports the services that we're doing. So for example, without naming names, there's a foundation that we're working with right now that is for particularly for Latina-owned businesses. So it's woman-owned and Latina-owned. And they are very local to Oregon. I'm sure they can find out who they are. And we are actually partnering with them to have a wholesale discount on the service. So we're getting 50 businesses to go in together on services. And the entire service is being funded by the government by helping them source the funding. And this is where we get into some of the policy regulation work that I'm doing with the government, is focusing on how can we responsibly use our funds to support these communities. And now that there's greater funding, and I think that's the U.S. has been doing a great job in terms of making sure that there's more adequate funding for those communities, then we want to make sure that we can steer the funding in a way that actually helps them. And we think that AI is the best way to help them.
I am taking in everything you said and feeling very encouraged about the future, because when I think of the digital divide, even though people aren't saying those words anymore, you know, this is one, you know, people worried about what, Wi-Fi access before, cellular data, you know, all of that. But now this is the big one to me, the lack of AI, you know, initiatives that can help communities that simply cannot afford some of these big solutions. Because the reality is, what I'm learning is, if you're willing to pay, you can get, you know, the kind of product you want, you can get people to write prompts and do all that. But if you can't, you know, a large group of people are being left behind. So what you're saying and what you're doing is, again, encouraging me and really also acknowledging the need for government agencies and cities and counties and even, you know, countries to consider, you know, as this progress is being made in record time, we can't forget, you know, what will happen if we just give it to the people who can, you know, pay, you know, as much as they can.
It's funny that you say that, because our company, AI Advantage Agency, is AAA. And that middle A is what we call the acknowledge method. And that's exactly what we're talking about, which is acknowledging the divide in accessibility and affordability for AI. So you summarized entirely why we started AI Advantage was for that exact reason.
I didn't even know that. So as someone who uses AI for creative writing, how do you balance the assistance of AI with maintaining your unique voice and style in your work?
So this is what I call human in the loop. There are essentially two approaches to AI. We have Copilot on one side. We have autopilot on the other. So when it comes to autopilot, this is the AI is actually going to do actions for you and go and put it into the world without a human in the loop. So this is an automation workflow where we're going A to X, and at the end of X, it's going out into the world. When it comes to Copilot is, hey, before it goes out into the world, let's have a checkpoint and let's check in with the human and let's see if this is something that they actually want to publish. Particularly when it comes to writing, is very helpful. So we always start our clients on the Copilot and over time work into autopilot. If autopilot is what they truly, truly want, we will deliver always, but Copilot is our biggest recommendation. And the reason why is because AI is a great job at getting 95% of the way there. And what this means is that, for example, say that we're generating a blog, AI can generate blogs like that, no problem, right? Now, when it comes to getting it to sound authentic to yourself, that's where we recommend that last bit of revision. So we always say, like, imagine in golf, your AI is your long driver, and the human in the loop is the little putt at the finish, which is AI can expedite the and scale the process in which you can do things, but keeping a human in the loop, still continuing to revise it and making sure that it's accurate is very crucial.
I agree. So you've had a hands-on experience with GPT-4 and its omni-channel capabilities. Can you share how these features enhance AI's performance in various applications?
GPT-4 versus GPT-4.0 is breaking into the omni-channel presence. And what I mean by this is essentially multimodality. So originally GPT, we think back to the early days, is really good, like we're saying, at text to text. So if I put text in, I can get text out. And that's generally how majority of people were using the model. That was all the technology at the time. As we get further to today's time, we now have all these different modalities that AI can interpret. So for example, AI can now interpret sound, image, videos. I mean, we're going to continue to get more and more modalities over time. The best thing about 4.0 in terms of how the technology has impacts in different industries is that we can now have things that were typically unstructured and still use AI. For example, let's say that I was using GPT-4 and I'm working on a blog. I would have my text prompt in and I get my text prompt out and I'd slightly modify it. And that's great. And that does the job for majority of people. Imagine that you could go into a space, you could record an audio clip, you could take a picture of the space, and then you could say, okay, you know, let's write a blog, but tell me about what you're hearing, what you're seeing, and then let's weave that into the writing as well to give it that little bit of authentic touch. That is kind of where we get into 4.0. The interesting thing about it too is when we start to bring it into robotics, this is where 4.0 has the largest amount of impact. Because previously, if I had a robot, think of like Amazon Alexa is a great example, talking all day, but she can't see, she can't move, right? Can interpret video. Now, when we get to 4.0, that's something that can actually go out into the world and be on its own in the sense that it can interpret all the environments around it, which comes with a different slew of problems, but is very exciting because that is the direction in which we have computer vision and the omnipresence.
That's like futuristic Jetson stuff going on, right? I mean, who knew it would happen so quickly? You know, one of the guests who came on, she was saying that, you know, you would have someone who knows you so well that when you have a conversation, how are you? They'll say, I'm doing great. How are you? And thanks for asking. Are we there yet?
We're there. This goes into 4.0, the advanced speech. So this is something that I was actually one of the red team beta testers for OpenAI. So I've been using this technology for the last 3 months. And I can tell you confidently, it is the most authentic sounding AI that you will ever hear up until now. When I say that it has difference in speech patterns, and it has pauses, able to add excitement onto the end of things, phrase things in terms of a question, the latency gets down to, you know, a fraction of a second, meaning that it will respond to you exactly like a human will. It'll ask you those questions. It no longer gives you the minute and a half response. It'll just say, for example, how are you? Said, I'm doing good. I'm actually thinking about this, but how are you doing? And it sounds crazy. I can't wait. They just started rolling it out 2 weeks ago. So more and more people are going to be getting access to it. And I'm excited to see how people are using it. One of my favorite ways that we actually use this in beta testing was we put two phones next to each other with the advanced mode on and just had them converse back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And it was very wild to see how they would steer the direction.
So did it pass the Turing test?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I've never seen anything like it. And like Hume might be the closest to it. And the cool thing about Hume is that it's open source. So anybody is able to build with it, whereas the right now, they're leaning towards OpenAI being more closed source. So these are some of the advanced capabilities that we may not see, or you might have to apply as a developer. But it is crazy to see that that technology is already getting there.
It is crazy to see. What are your thoughts on Meta AI?
So I'm so glad you asked that. I love Meta AI. I'm a huge fan. I think my favorite thing about Meta AI is the fact that they have become the champions of open source. Everything that they're doing from an academic level, they're sharing all of it. And the interesting thing about it is that Meta has more financial backing than just about anybody in the AI space. And rather than turn it for profitability and keep it closed source, they're releasing everything, all of their academic findings, everything they're doing inside of their labs. It is phenomenal how they have really risen to the accessibility of open source AI. And honestly, I could not praise them more. And I was not previously a fan of Meta because of some of the privacy violations that they've had over the past few years. But in terms of Meta AI, it has been amazing to see how Mark Zuckerberg has steered that ship in a way that is working phenomenally for open source.
Thank you for answering that and giving me that, because I've been thinking about Meta. I haven't really used the tool and I was concerned about, you know, I guess I was feeling the way that you had mentioned with the privacy concerns. However, you know, this idea of open sourcing is really important to me as well. And so I will definitely check that out. As we wrap up, I wanted to ask if you have any tips for journalists in small newsrooms or even big newsrooms on what they should be thinking about if they haven't already done so in terms of AI in the next few years.
Wow. Okay. Next few years, I'll give you next few months, because I think the next few years, that's a whole nother hour long conversation in and of itself.
Okay. Hopefully you can come back on the show.
Yes, absolutely. So I would say if you're in journalism or in a newsroom right now, the things you should be focused on with AI is how can you augment the journalism process with AI? And I say augment and not replace, because I think that there is a big stigma in the industry when it comes to using AI. And I think that a lot of people are afraid, not just in journalism and creative across the board, any creative industry, they see AI as a threat to replace those jobs. And I think that is the wrong way to look at it. I think the best, the most responsible and most ethical way to look at it is, what types of things can I automate or augment, or AKA, what types of things can I have AI do the heavy lifting for me so that way I can focus on the things that are actually a higher return on my time? So for example, say in the research process, when you're doing research, I'm sure that it is very time consuming and you might have to, you know, validate multiple different sources and it might take hours on end. You might have to travel to different places. That is now, because of the digital world that we live in, that's something that AI can do in a matter of seconds, which then allows you to focus more on the creative elements, which is, now that I have all this information, how can I weave it? How can I spin it? Which you know much better than I do. So I would say the first question I would ask is, of my job and of my life, what types of things, what types of heavy lifting things can I start to give to AI? And my second bit of advice would be to start small and build over time. Don't start by saying, hey, I can give 60% of my life to AI or 60% of my job to AI. Start with maybe 6%. And see how it goes, experiment with it, like we said, get hands-on with the models. And then over time, I'll start to understand more and more and get to that bigger vision. So I would say, what can AI do the heavy lifting for? And start with something that you know it can do very well. If you don't know what it can do very well, come find me.
Okay, that is great advice. That's it for this show. I hope you've had a great time listening to our guest, AJ Green. AJ, it's been great having you on the show.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Before we go, I want to remind you about an upcoming webinar. This one is going to show you 3 easy ways to optimize your LinkedIn profile, and I'm going to show you how to use certain AI tools that can be found for free or relatively cheap. That's going to make optimizing your LinkedIn profile much, much easier. For more details, head over to yumiwilson.me. Until the next time. That's all for today's episode. And don't forget to sign up for my webinar, where I'll be teaching you 3 ways to supercharge your LinkedIn profile using AI tools. And remember, this webinar is free. You can find the registration link in the show notes. And to stay up to date on all the latest offerings and my coaching sessions, be sure to register for my newsletter at yumiwilson.me and connect on LinkedIn and other social media channels. Until then, stay curious and stay informed.